Public Media.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to The Exchange. This is Cheryl Castile. We have some very, very talented folks in the studio today. We're going to be discussing theater, outside, Shakespeare, and just talent in general. My guest today, we have with the Wanderlust Theater Company, we have Brady McKellar. Welcome, Brady.
Hey, welcome. Thank you for having us.
Elsa, I have her here just because I like to say her name, Elsa Dimitriadis.
Hi.
So many syllables.
I know. Say it. You know, Elsa Dimitriadis.
Elsa Dimitriadis.
I love it. Just kind of flows. Of course.
Okay, Duncan Thistle.
I can't talk.
I know, and then we get the next one. Charlie Helfand.
Yes.
Charlie, it is, I'm going to speak for myself, but I'm sure I'm not the only one. It's great to have you back in the area again.
Thank you. Yeah. It's wonderful to be back and work with these wonderful people.
And for education and for folks involved in theater, it's that's very cool that you're back.
You know, where I grew up, it's Alphan. I'm sorry.
Oh, Alphan. Charlie.
No
I'm
H.
Sorry. How do you pronounce it, Charlie?
Helfand.
You see?
Where I come from, there's no N. It's just Helfand.
So, and then, and for your name, we don't say Thistle Thwaite.
We don't.
We leave the second TH silent.
They do across the pond, though.
Do they?
Yeah.
You know, I met one time, and I think you and I had the conversation, your brother Jeff and I did, but what's his name that he plays horn and sax and he played?
Anthony.
Thank you.
Yeah, with the Water
Boys. When he spent all that time here. And I'm trying to think of how he pronounced it.
Antony.
No. And that concludes the comedy portion of the show.
I think it was Thistlethwaite.
Would say Thistlethwaite. Yeah, so Duncan Thistlethwaite for folks who didn't catch who our fourth guest is here today. But you're all involved with a wonderful production of Shakespeare's Comedy of Errors. And you're doing a very cool thing with it, and you are bringing outdoor theater to the area.
Actually, it's very hot.
It's a very hot thing. You know, I drove by on the way here. I drove to check out the space, and it's very cool. And I know, Duncan, you were responsible for building that stage there, huh?
Well, partially. What happened was Charlie here teaches at Lafayette High, and there was a stock of old raked, you know, sloped theater staging from an old production. And so we borrowed that and sort of rebuilt them to our purposes. And so that was kind of like the genesis of it. We were just going to play it flat on the ground or do something else. But then this happened, and it worked out real nice. The stage is a rake.
Yeah.
You know, there's a slight angle to it, which is very performance-y. And,
I'm curious the color, because it's this great reddish color.
Yes.
About, you know, was there a purpose for why that? No, really,
sort of.
When you're set designing, was there a purpose for outside for that?
Well, I mean,
explain.
It popped from the green grass, and it kind of had that old melodrama-y feel. But also, we did red earlier this season, and we had copious amounts of red paint left. And it's the end of the season, and we had it, and it looked good, so we just went with it.
Yeah. Well, it's a nice big space over there.
It is.
Next to Johnson's Boucanier, but on the corner, it's St. John's and
Convent.
Yeah. But that is a great, great space. And, you know, I think it's wonderful, too. You see what's happening in a lot of projects with community development. You know, when cities are looking at, okay, how can we use what's already here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and maybe we don't have access to this or that, but here's what we do have, and what can we do with it? And I'm curious about the thoughts kind of in relation to that that may have gone, you know, through your heads, how you decided to do this, you know, and how you chose, you know, that space.
We were looking for a space that, first of all, was flat, you know, at least for a playing area. We looked at some public parks. we're looking forward to when the horse farm is ready to be performed in.
Sure.
But in the meantime, we wanted to go ahead and do that this summer. And Lori, the owner at Johnson's Boucaniere, was very, you know, she has this green space, and she donated the time and the area, and it's been a great relationship that we've started.
Yeah.
And it's a really great situation, too, because it's very local. I mean, it's kind of hard to get more local than Johnson's Boucaniere. You know, it's like right there. People know that location, you know, and it's right off downtown.
And people know where the cathedral is, too.
Absolutely.
Right,
you
right. Know? And it's a very community feel to have it in that space.
Yeah.
You know,
the other thing, too, that you know, a lot of folks look at, like with that space that you chose and what you're doing with this event, and go back to community development, it's such a great way, and arts is very good at that, to bring awareness to a certain area of town, into a downtown area, into areas of town that, you know, some people might not be, you know, familiar with. There's quite a movement with that, and it's been going on for a while with the use of arts in terms of what happens, you know, with community development. Go ahead. Also.
And frankly, you know, when we were looking at some of the public park areas, there was a lot of red tape, you know, more than you would imagine.
Sure.
And it was lovely to have it felt very supportive, this green space that we're using.
Yeah.
You know, easy and come and watch a show under the stars.
Yeah. Have you done anything like this before, even prior to living here?
We did a piece in Slidell, right outside of New Orleans, in a public park.
Okay.
But not on – certainly not on this scale.
It was a very, very small piece, comparatively speaking.
Mm-hmm. So so we're used to, I think, performing for, you know, who knows what might happen.
Uh-huh.
But as far as the logistics, they've been very challenging.
And the challenges being?
All the costumes have to be brought out every night, all the props. A lot of the set has to be struck. I mean, has to be
and when
arrested
you say
and
be
struck.
Brought out, you mean packed up and taken out of
right,
the space.
Right, sure.
Right.
And, you know, there's also issues to deal with regarding, you know, sight lines, lights, sound, you know, all that sort of stuff, just to make sure that everyone, the throngs of people that will no doubt come to see Comedy of Errors, will be able to see and hear clearly, you know, what's going on. But it's a lot of setup and takedown before and after every show.
I'm curious, too, about the whole issue with projection. You know, of the voice, mm-hmm. when you're, you know, what things go into consideration with that when you're outdoors.
Well, we were going to use, the initial idea was to use individual headsets on each actor, you know, like they do in Angel here.
Okay.
In a big hall where there's a tiny mic, you know, taped somewhere near the actor's mouth, and everyone has a battery pack, and we have, I don't know, 12, 50, mm-hmm. 50, you know, so there were so many speaking parts that we looked desperately for another solution, and we found a certain kind of mic that's made specifically for this purpose, outdoor or large stage productions, that eliminates the need for every actor to have a headset. It's a crown microphone. And
so how is that placed, you know, in terms
of
the stage?
There are three of them at the lip of the stage.
So they're low to the – okay, so they sit right on –
mm-hmm. To the floor of the stage, and they're designed to pick up the voice. And we saw some reviews and saw online other companies that had used them to great success. To get away from using the headsets for everybody, and it made it simplified everything, and it works beautifully.
So it's really wonderful too, because it's like here is this open air, you know, and nobody's sitting there trying to turn one person up and turn one person down, and you know you're not getting feedback because people stand too close and that sort of thing. It's like here are the mics on the stage, and it just creates a space that we can do our work.
And the speaker, I mean, there's.
We have two speakers on you know, the little expandable towers
left and
right.
Yeah.
And the mics feed into the PA system.
So they're plugged directly, right?
They're plugged directly in. So every actor is unencumbered by all this hardware.
Oh, that's fantastic.
But the voices pick up beautifully.
It really works well.
Really excited about it.
What's interesting is the further back you go, it almost seems like it gets more clear.
Interesting.
And, you know, invariably with the headsets, you know, an actor will do something wrong on stage and they walk off stage and they're cursing or whatever
and
it picks it up, you know, whereas this eliminates that.
Well, you know, and just – Charlie, have you – you know, because you've been involved in a lot of different things, and have you done outdoor performances?
Yes, but not in this type of venue before. I did one with my students at Acadian Village last year. We did Trojan Women.
Yeah.
But most of what I've performed in have been outdoor venues. So this is the first time that we've built actually our venue from scratch.
And yeah. You know, what I thought of with that with, you know, I'm going back to one of the pieces that Jaron Shakeschneider had done at a house, you know, when she did the theater in the house. And we were outside for part of the time. And I mean, you can't plan for if somebody's going to come by blasting with heavy, you know, the radio on their truck.
Yeah, it's such a wonderful part of the experience.
Are you being sarcastic?
No, not at all.
Very cool.
I mean, it's part of the experience.
We'll
I mean, that's what happens when you do live theater. I mean, people on their phones, or dogs running by, or people whispering to each
that's
other.
Right.
It's part of the performance,
and
it makes it special.
Our first big rehearsal with the sound set up and mics running, there was a dog that was on the street right behind where the stage set up that, I mean, it must have barked the entire show. I mean, it never stopped barking.
Yeah.
You're just like,
it was
well,
a helicopter.
What do you do?
Yeah.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, and then it says to the professionalism, too, that and what you all have to do, I'm assuming, to train yourselves to block that out.
We work with that at the rehearsal space. We have a cat.
No, but seriously.
It's true. And he has the run of the place. And if he shows up in your scene, well, you just have to work with that.
Yeah.
I'm joking.
No, but there's always going to be, you know, and what I noticed, I remember that time at the piece that Jaron had done, that when a couple things did happen, it was really interesting to me to see that kind of what you're speaking to, Charlie, is that it didn't really affect people's paying attention to what was happening. You know, I mean, I think that everybody went into with the mindset of, wow, this is a great new experience, which it was for a lot of people to go see something in that kind of setting, and you just expect whatever.
Well, we, you know, we were rehearsing for a while in Park Putnam, and, you know, a lot of itinerant people spend time there. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And they would give us notes while we were rehearsing. And so that was a lovely thing to kind of get used to, too, because, you know, especially in Shakespeare's time, a lot of that sort of response, you know, people would just yell up at the stage and tell them what they thought of their characters.
Which we're not hoping for, incidentally.
That's not a requirement.
Do you know, you bring that up, though. What was an interesting thing is right after following Hurricane Katrina, and I was working at Cité des Arts at that point, and we had a number of theater folks who were staying in this area temporarily from New Orleans, and they put on a production, and a number of the folks in the theater audience were from New Orleans. And that was the first time, just for me, I mean, I haven't been a theater professional like you guys for all those years, but it was the first time that I experienced people yelling things to the actors that were on stage that much. I mean, every now and then you would have one person who would say things, but I mean, this was a good part of the audience.
This, you know, the convention that we have now where we sit there and it's very staid and is a relatively new concept, you know? And that's what, I mean, I was sitting there, I was talking to Charlie during rehearsal the other night, and we're sitting in beer chairs and, you know, you have ambient smells and sounds and there's theater going on. And I mean, it's kind of the way it's supposed to be, you know?
Well, and when you go back to the early, early years and you're talking about, you know, Shakespeare and how things were done way back, it wasn't everybody just sitting in their chairs and being very quiet.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, in ancient Rome, which is further back than Shakespeare, they would do things where they would do scenes multiple times, and then they would do a scene over again entirely in pantomime, just because they were so used to the idea that people would be talking or eating or drinking or doing other various and sundry things. And the same was still true in Shakespeare's
day. And for the purpose of people being able to catch what was going on.
Yes,
they would repeat a
scene three times just to make sure that everyone had the same opportunity to understand.
Yeah, yeah.
And even in Shakespeare's day, I mean, there was not so much of that scene rearrangement, but it was very social to go to the theater. And it was not considered rude for you and I to have a conversation while people are doing things on stage or eating or drinking.
But it is now. I mean, you know, that's very different from how it is now.
Brady grew up in a theater in Vicksburg that still does traditional melodrama. and they're peanuts that you throw, and they teach you at the beginning how to boo at the villain and how to cheer for the, you know, the ingenue, and so it's a lovely thing to watch that sort of thing have. Well, it's weird to watch it have to be encouraged because now we've unlearned that.
Sure.
But it's really interesting to see that sort of thing still happen.
It is there. Were you going to say something, Charlie?
I was just going to say that it's really interesting, this movement that theater is – the direction that theater is headed in. And it seems like it's more of a communal experience now.
Okay, good, because that was my next question. So that is something that is happening in how theater is taught.
Oh, absolutely. There's shows in New York City right now. There's one called Sleep No More, where the audience is almost like active participants in the actual play itself. It's like this adaptation of Macbeth that takes place in a huge, like, seven-story warehouse, and you walk through the warehouse, and it's kind of like you experience the show as it's happening.
Yeah.
And it seems like there's this push for a more personal, more communal experience between actors and audience members. And I think certainly, although this play isn't exactly, you know, there's no audience participation or anything like that, but Elsa has directed it in a way that is very presentational,
sure,
in a way. So, like, a lot of times we're facing out and we're, you know, a direct address. I mean, Shakespeare has asides written into the play as well. So it feels like this is a more, like you were talking about, like more of a community,
yeah,
communal-based experience.
So with what you are teaching now, you know, like you're at Lafayette High, is that a portion of, you know, of a style of theater that you are focusing on now with your students?
Partially. We haven't really hit that yet. I would love to do some work. We did with Trojan Women somewhat presentational style with that, because the play was written about the refugees in Bosnia.
Yeah.
Or it was a an adaptation with that in mind.
Sure.
And I think it was actually originally performed as a reading play. So absolutely. I mean, I think that it's important to have that experience and to kind of start, for me, to kind of start breaking down that wall between audience and performer, because it makes it such a more enjoyable experience, I think, for performer and for audience member.
And what's the refresh me again, you guys, about which wall is it?
The fourth wall.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, because you got the three. Yeah, duh. Yeah, but I mean that's something that's been talked about a lot in theater, mm-hmm, about breaking down
the
that.
Fourth wall.
But then, okay, if that is how things are going, you know, like, let's say on a national level, that people are starting to pay attention to that in theater now and really engaging the audience more, then comes that next piece of having to re-educate, you know, audience members on what were you going to say, Elsa?
Nothing. You know, yes, you're re-educating your audience members, but also your actors, who for the last 100 years have been taught a very naturalistic style of acting, and suddenly you're saying, wink at the audience if there's a joke that you think they might miss.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And it's been interesting. Two of Charlie's students are in the show, along with, you know, all of these kind of seasoned adults, adult actors, and it's. It's hard at this point. You know, you would think it would be easier the younger that they are, but it's harder because it drilled into their head has been, you need to be in this bubble with the other actors, and it's we're just spectators.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Augusto Boal, he's a Brazilian theater theorist, and he calls them spect actors instead of spectators.
Spect actors.
Because he feels like the spectators have to be part of it.
Yeah, yeah.
So. I think alcohol helps, too.
Yeah, no, alcohol, that's right. People have a few drinks.
It's also, I think, very interesting, where I think we're going to be kind of approaching this sort of, you know, almost a tipping point, because we do have a lot of theater that exists where, you know, we do want the audience to sit there and be quiet and just experience our work. But
yeah,
then we are getting to a point, like with the style of plays that Jaron liked to do, to where the audience is more directly involved, or styles of theater coming back like this, where it's very, very broad. And I think that it may get to a point where it's going to be confusing to the audience to know what kind of play they're going to see. And
sure,
so I think directors have to be sure very early on in a performance that they establish how they want the audience to act or interact or react
and
to
how,
the
and
style
how is that
of the
done?
Presentation.
I How do you do that?
I recommend having people fall down. Always lets people know it's a comedy. So
well,
that's a good start.
Actually, you know, very early in this piece, there are a lot of fight scenes, but there's no actual contact, you know? There's not even – we're not even trying to presuppose that there's contact when somebody hits somebody else.
Yeah.
But Duncan is doing the sound effects and that kind of old school snare drum sort of thing.
Sure.
So I think right off the bat people will get that this is not, you know, highbrow theater.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to detour here for a second because what I do for the – I have Charlie on here today. And Charlie, when you were involved in theater here for quite a while and then you went away to grad school.
Yes.
Yeah, right? Okay. I'm curious because I really do want to talk about you for a minute. And since you're now back in the area, what did you – for the time period that you were gone – what did you learn about your involvement with theater and what direction you want to see yourself go in at this point?
I think the biggest change for me – I had this wonderful teacher in grad school. Her name was Eileen Blumenthal, and she is a puppet genius as well as –
And then you hook up with the two
puppet
folks
here. Then I move home and I have these two wonderful puppet masters that are here.
Yeah.
And I took an avant-garde theater class with her, which opened my eyes because I was mainly – the way I was trained was in, you know, naturalistic, realistic theater, basic Stanislavski technique.
Which for folks that don't know what that means, what does that mean?
It's theater kind of changed once Freud introduced like psychotherapy. Things became very internal and we wanted to understand why people were motivated as far as what motivates their actions. What do they do to get what they want? What do they want? I mean,
sure.
Those are like basic questions that, you know, any actor would ask themselves when preparing a script. And the program that I went to was very realism-based, but this one teacher – actually, there were a few teachers. I had two that were really wonderful teachers that it was kind of working – one teacher was kind of working from the outside in instead of from the inside out. He worked a lot in archetypes, which is a Chekhov – not Anton Chekhov, but Michael Chekhov technique. And that was really interesting in working in that style. And I felt like as an actor, it was very freeing because it wasn't all like heady because we all know, I mean, we all have basic instincts in our body. I mean, when we think we touch a stove, we lift our hand because we know it's hot. I think our emotions are a lot like that. There's not a lot of psychotherapy involved in that.
I think
those two teachers really changed me, and I feel that I have more of a broader sense of what theater could be and not stuck, like what Elsa said, in that highbrow kind of approach to text and to theater. I saw a production of A Doll's House that was done with all little people except for Nora. Nora was a regular sized human. So just the gamut of like interesting, and I got to see that production of Sleep No More in New York City, and it was amazing. It's so different. I think audiences are people are being more and more stimulated with movies. I mean, you go see an action movie like Terminator, you can barely see what's happening on the screen because people are moving so fast and everything is like so loud and intense. So I think as society, we move more towards these stimulating video games and movies that are hyper stimulating. Theater, it feels like, has to move in that direction.
Interesting.
As well, to kind of keep up. There's this wonderful director and playwright. His name is Ki Nguyen, and he has put anime on the stage, and it's really, really interesting. I think it's that trend.
Well, you know, it's that whole piece too. That I mean, and you all have. I mean, Duncan, my God, you were in education for how long? You know, you're all educators. I mean, you look at. I think Charlie, one thing you speak to that's really important is that, you know, young people today are learning in a way that no one else. I mean, and that's kind of what happens generation to generation. Whatever gets, you know, developed or invented, or people's styles and ideas. I mean, people each generation learn in a way that nobody else has ever learned before. I mean, you have, you know, some of your basic things. And I think, you know, you're right about, boy, how we take in information today is just – it's fast, 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 you know?
I think the other thing that theater can do is, as we're moving toward that kind of hyperstimulation, is also address the things that – on the complete other end of the spectrum.
Exactly.
Where, you know, like Jaron's plays that are, you know, set in a house where there is no set per se.
Yeah, yeah.
Or in Red, what I thought was lovely, probably the loveliest part, unfortunately, these actors probably will kill me for this, is like just watching them stretch a canvas or paint, mm-hmm. and things that we rarely slow down and just observe, mm-hmm. especially now that we live in this kind of hyper-stimulated world.
Yeah.
And so I think that theater will be able to not only keep up and be big and, you know, big puppets and noise and, you know, all yeah. of this sort of thing, but also be able to slow people down.
Which is needed.
Right, yeah. Absolutely, and yeah. watch kind of the nuance,
yeah.
you know, that we're going to lose at some point.
Because, you know, what I think is cool about what you guys are doing with this production is, you know, to what Charlie had, and what we've all been talking about right now is, you know, you see how everything is fast, 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 and how we take in technology. Yet, boy, you look at – there's so many of the younger generation now who are really into back to the earth and organic farming.
Oh, sure.
And really
Absolutely.
Paying attention to those things because you need that. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to have that. You cannot – not have that kind of balance. And this type of production that you're doing, I mean, it does. It feeds right into what those needs are.
And it was hard, you know, because I think all of us have a tendency in this room, all of us, you know, it's like, well, let's build a theater and let's do lights exactly like we would have them. And you know, constantly reminding ourselves, look, we're not let's just rent a theater and do this show, right? Mm-hmm. And kind of trying to scale back. I mean, sometimes we were successful and sometimes I
But a lot
wasn't.
Of it was very much about like, wow, what's the simplest way that we can go about just making sure that we have a show that has entrances and exits and that people can see it and hear it, you know? And it was – you know, it wasn't about, well, let's get these giant, you know, hanging lights and light trees and let's set up. What it was about, we're going to get a row of footlights that are going to go at the base of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll start when it's not yet dark and we'll just go quickly, you
exactly.
know, and hope that everything – you know, it's just been about what's the simplest thing that we can put up here to do the job we need in order to tell this really – funny story.
Yeah, yeah.
And as an actor, it's really, really exciting to be a part of this kind of grassroots, getting back to basics production. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, it is a full stage. There are lights. There are microphones. But there's something really nice about being outside and smelling Johnson's Buccaneer. It's kind of like this, like, campy kind of barbecue smell, mm-hmm. that you feel, mm-hmm. like when you go like camping and we smell that
sure.
all the time during rehearsal. And it's kind of this wonderful, I guess just getting back to basics.
Yeah.
And the idea with the actors is as soon as they step off the stage, they're done. So if they want to sit in their chair and look through the script or smoke a cigarette or do what, you know, read a book, then they're encouraged to do so. You know, they want to go back to the tent where they change costume, and the audience watches them do that. And so if it's a moment where they're like, oh my God, I'm supposed to be on stage, I forgot, then you'll see them jump up and jump up there, you know. So.
Exactly. If you're just joining us, this is The Exchange on KRVS. We're just going to take a short break. Cecil, let's put on, since we do have Duncan here, just a little music while we're taking a break. Duncan's brother, Jeff, is in a band called that a lot of folks know, Bus Class. And this is from the CD. It's from the Medicine Show that has been taking place how many years here. And let's listen to Alain's Danse. That's track 4. And this is Bus Class. No? Cecil? We'll come back to that. But if – you ready?
It's been a long time coming. Would you please welcome Bus Class?
Was Boss Klaus, Alons Don't Say, and that was from Medicine Show, Volume 3. And great way to play Boss Klaus since we have Jeff Thistlewaite, who's in that band. We have his brother Duncan on the show today. If you're just joining us, this is The Exchange on KRVS 88.7 FM or KRVS.org. Please check out the website, It's a great place to donate. We want to say tip of the hat to everybody out there who continues to support the station. And you can continue to do that. Very easy. A great donate button right on the front. You can click on that and continue to give. My guests today in the studio are all connected with the theater production that Wanderlust Theater Company is putting on, the Comedy of Errors, which will take place. It opens tomorrow. Correct?
Yes. Weather willing.
Weather willing.
If the crit don't rise.
There you go. And my guests in the studio today are Brady McKellar, Elsa Dimitriadis, Charlie, I'll say Halfen, Duncan would say Alfan, and I think Brady had another way, and Duncan Thistlewaite. So welcome back to the show. But it does open this Wednesday.
It does.
And it runs – give us the rundown for the times.
We run Wednesday through Saturday of this week and Wednesday through Saturday of the next week at 7:30 at night. We're not doing matinees because it would be too hot.
Yeah, okay. And then it runs – but you said next week also.
Yes, Wednesday through Saturday for 2 weeks.
Very nice.
But you should get there a little bit early because not only do you want to make sure you can camp out your spot, but there's also going to be local food trucks and things to get food to eat. So you want to make sure you're –
or you can bring your own picnic.
Just want to make sure that you're sat and ready to go.
And now people can bring their own chairs.
Yes, please. Or blankets, or they can go to errors.eventbrite.com and there'll be a seat waiting for them when they get here.
And it's great too. If you go to Facebook and you check out the event, Comedy of Errors Wanderlust, and that's Wander, WANDERLUSD, theater for their event page on Facebook. It just lays it all out for you. Very mm-hmm. well done. Yeah, this got all the information on there. I really want to encourage people, too, to go check this out. And I know, you know, other times we have had folks on and we're talking about theater and theater productions. It comes up quite a bit that there's still a large group of individuals out there who haven't taken the opportunity to find out what theater is all about, and for a number of reasons. And this, I think, gives people such a great opportunity that if you've been nervous before about, because I don't know how the process works when you get into the theater, how does this all – this is a great way. I mean, but you know.
No, it absolutely. Is.
Right. This is a great way to do it because you can even, you know, park a couple blocks away and just go peek and see, you mm-hmm. know, what's
and
going on.
It's pay what you will, and people can pay what they will at the beginning or the end. So if they come and they choose not to pay until the end and see what they think we deserve, then they're free to do that as well.
Yeah, so. Yeah. How was back in the day? Now, this would have been when you were little. No, I'm kidding, Duncan.
Oh.
I'm
kidding. An age joke.
No, Duncan's not. Duncan and I
hey, look who's talking.
I know, we're like in the same age group. No, but Brady, because I think you're the one who knows this stuff. But back in the day, was payment made for
Oh,
theater?
Sure, absolutely.
And was it through a monetary thing? Or
it was. There were different ticket prices at Shakespeare's Globe. There are a variety
Wait,
of different –
Wait, what did you just say? Shakespeare's what?
Shakespeare's Globe. It was the large wooden theater.
Oh, yeah,
theater.
That's
it was
how the –
octagonal.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And it was called the Globe, and there were a variety of different ticket prices. And you actually had a different entrance into the theater based off of how much you were willing – so you never had to rub elbows with anyone beneath you if that was your choice. But the least expensive ticket went to a group of people called the Groundlings.
Yeah.
And they actually went and stood. There were no seats for them. And they stood basically right there on the ground. And there was no cover over them. So if it rained, they got rained on and the sun beat down on them. And that was sort of the base element. And then there were two or three tiers that would go up based off of how much you wanted to pay. Usually the highest levels were reserved for officials or visiting people or clergy or things of that nature.
And you could pay to sit on stage.
Yes, you could. Up until David Garrick sort of started kicking people off.
And who is he?
Of course you're going to ask. I shouldn't have said the
no,
name.
But I mean, is he from like how long
no,
ago
no, no.
are we
he
talking?
He was in the 1700s.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And up until that time, you could actually buy a ticket and put your chair on stage left or stage right. And it was one of these things, and it's the same reason why like a lot of these older theater houses have these box seats.
Sure, that are sitting, up on the sides in front.
Nobody wants to actually see the play from there. But at that time, and even in Shakespeare's time and during the Spanish Golden Age, it was more about you being seen than it was about you having a good sight line. And so, yes, you could pay to get a seat right there on stage if you wanted to.
Huh, interesting. Very interesting.
We're not going to have that option.
If someone wants to pay enough,
what a climbing in a tree.
I would put Price Is Right up there if they'd like to make a donation.
I'm trying to think if I saw there were trees right up next to the side, you know.
There's a tree close by. Yeah.
Watch from there,
That's right.
For folks that – and I know you had been on Judith's show too, but you know, for folks who may not have heard that show, whoever wants to – and I don't know if Elsa, that's you – but if somebody can just give a brief kind of synopsis of what Comedy of Bears is about, so people know what
it's about a set of twins who that family has also purchased another set of twins so that each young boy has a servant, and so there are two sets of twins and they are separated at birth, one twin from each pair, and one group goes looking for the other and has been looking for 17 years for the other brothers, and then they happen upon them in the same town, and everybody is confusing them for the other twin, and you know, it's very Frasier-like and sort of like people leaving one entrance and coming in another. And that sort of thing. And we have Aaron Chasson is playing both twins and Brady is playing both of the other set of twins.
Yeah, and how does that work, Brady?
Madly.
Yeah.
It is. It's a lot of running around the stage from behind and trying to make sure you're coming in at the right place at the right time and that you are the correct twin, you have the right hat or thing on that, you know, differentiate who's who. But it's a good bit of – the first thing I did was I went through my script with two different colored highlighters, and one twin got green and one twin got blue. And so that way, as we're learning things, I could always easily track who was supposed to show up next.
And who was doing what. Mm-hmm. And Charlie, your character in this production.
I play two characters.
Oh, you play two
yes.
also. Okay.
Three, actually. Yeah.
And by the time you leave here today, we may do four.
Might be four.
You can be one of the Dromios if you want. I can definitely do that.
So tell us about the characters.
The main character I play is Luciana, which is the sister to Adriana. She's the wife of one of the twins. And she urges her sister not to be jealous of her husband's infidelity.
Yeah, okay, all right.
And then I play a servant that comes to warn their mistress that the madness is ensuing with his master.
Yeah. The main character that you have, that's a character that keeps coming in and out throughout the production?
Yes.
Yeah, so I mean, you're a busy gal that night.
Yes, yeah. And all four of us make up our band as well, so...
And before we get to the band, Duncan, your character.
I'm Aegean. I'm the father of the two twins.
Ah, okay. Both sets of twins.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I fathered two and then purchased two, so I have.
You know, like you do.
Yeah.
That's right.
See, the parents were poor, and so I just bought them.
It's
so strange.
Yeah.
It is. It's very odd.
Yeah. No, it is.
To be servants to my son. How does that work?
Yeah.
So that's an interesting part of the script that we have. You know, you buy servants for your kids. I don't
know. Oh, Shakespeare.
A little bit for everybody, you know. Tell us about the band.
Well, we wanted to, you know, you have scene changes and a lot of times they, you know, they use music in Shakespeare. And so we're doing a number of covers, very, very short snippets of covers that kind of comment on what just happened.
Let me ask you, okay, covers of like modern day music,
yes.
Right? That's what you mean by
yes.
that.
Not quite modern.
Not quite modern.
No,
but
from that day.
No, ma'am.
Yeah, I don't even know about from that day.
No, we're actually doing some 80s covers. And
can you give us a hint of like one?
We're doing Fat Bottom Girls.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And after Brady has a very long scene with Aaron about a large woman that is in love with him.
She's spherical.
She's spherical, like a globe.
She's spherical. And how is that being performed?
We're sitting on the side of the stage.
Is it a cappella with instruments?
There's an a cappella number, but for the most part, it's
amplified
acoustic instruments.
Who's playing?
Duncan plays guitar. Brady's on banjo and mandolin. Charlie's doing drums and singing. I'm on keyboards. And Katie Slattery is also doing some percussion.
Okay.
So they run up on stage, do their scene, hightail it back off, sing a song.
So keyboard's something that's been in your life?
That was what I originally went to college for.
Either I didn't know that or I forgot that. Charlie, when did that come into your life?
Oh.
Just now.
about a month ago.
Seriously?
No. Yeah. I mean, I've always, you know, played with friends in drum circles and stuff, but nothing like really, really seriously.
Like, do you have a drum kit up there during this, or you have a snare? Or
what? No, I have a djembe.
Oh, you do? Oh, very cool. Okay. All right. And a lot of people don't know Duncan from theater and set design. I have no idea how good of a guitar player he is.
Well, it used to be, but...
It's like riding a bike.
The digits are rusty.
Yeah, get those fingers back in order. And I didn't realize the instruments that you play.
A little bit, yes.
You realize the instruments?
No. Well, I started playing the banjo a little while back when we first started talking about the idea of Kevin having this sort of acoustic string and keyboard kind of a thing. But the mandolin very, very lately, just to sort of add in another layer to the sound. But it's a lot of fun.
It's really
kind of been a disappointment because it's like we've worked on these songs and then we were like, okay, we got to make some cuts. But then once we really started to get them into the rehearsals with, you know, as we were like, these things are still too long, you know? And so like these songs that we've been working on and having a great time with, it's now like, all right, 10 seconds, done. That's
cut it to the chorus.
That's what you get. We'll do the chorus and out. And so it's just like,
But you know what I'm thinking about? I mean, you folks that are here have some – you know, main roles in this production, and that gives you no downtime. Playing in the band.
Brady has none.
None,
yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
Times when, like, we get back to the house and he just sits in the car. Yeah. Like, you have to get out of the car now. And he's like, I don't know if I have the energy to walk in.
No, exactly. You kind of need to regroup yourself after something like that.
It is. There's a lot going on, you know, but it's a lot of fun. It's just absolutely a lot of fun just running around, and especially because, again, the way that the show has been set up, that it's like like we as actors aren't hiding. You know what I mean? You go off stage, you can run around behind the stage, you can run the front of the stage, you go sit down to the bank, you know? And so it's really kind of fun just making all of these moves happen.
Yeah.
And if somebody sees you, they see you. And that's just part of this kind of like, you know, here's some Shakespeare.
Exactly.
But Duncan has this like 8-minute monologue and then he walks right off stage and plays the intro to the song, you know? And we're like, what can we do to help? And he's like, it's just changing from being an actor to being a musician. You know, it's not about, oh, I don't have time to put my guitar on. It's like, oh, crap, I have to sing this song now. You know?
What key is this?
Yeah. Are you playing acoustic or electric?
Acoustic, but it's plugged in. I have a little pickup on it. It's plugged in.
But you know, it's interesting because what I thought of you playing in the band too was when and I thought of you during the Tonys this year, too, with the production of Hedwig,
yes.
You know, and you had set up the whole thing with the live band, you know.
That was so much fun.
Yeah. And it really in my experience with Shakespeare is not a lot, but there was and I'm assuming more than one of his productions that there was seemed to be like this group of like traveling minstrels or minstrels that would show.
That's kind of the feel we were trying to do, you know, to replicate, but sort of with something that seemed more accessible to modern day audiences.
Yeah.
And like I said, I encourage the actors to, you know, that they're just a band of actors. We have to set up the stage in front of people. So just like embrace it. You know, you can't hide it.
Exactly.
With this production.
And, you know, because Duncan, I'm thinking back to when you had done Hedwig. I mean, that was a lot of work with that band. And so I'm just thinking what Elsa was saying about you going from that 8-minute monologue, which is a lot of work when you're on a stage.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, and then switch to
Well, in Hedwig, I was just playing guitar. I had no speaking role, so it was kind of easy. It was just, you know, you could sit back and it was like structured like a gig.
Sure.
So didn't present any of those same problems that this show does. You know, not switching, whatever.
Well, switching gears.
Switching music, switching gears.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. If you just joined us, this is The Exchange, and my guests on the studio are all connected to the production of Comedy of Errors being put on opening tomorrow night with Wanderlust Theater. And it's Brady McKellar. Yeah, Brady McKellar. I thought I erred there longer.
McKellar.
Elsa Dimitriadis, Charlie Helfen, and Duncan Thistlewaite. And again, that show does open tomorrow night. It runs for 2 weeks, Wednesday through
Saturday.
And you can go to Facebook page. It's a great place to find out a lot about it with Wanderlust Theater. And you can search Wanderlust Theater Comedy of Errors, and it pops right up. Can you talk a bit about, and Elsa, that may be you, but who else is in this production?
Yes, we have a wonderfully seasoned cast. Monique Araby, Megan Lake, Chris Matochi are all recent UL grads.
Oh, okay.
Aaron Chasson, who everybody who goes to theater knows.
Yeah.
Ione Eakins and Melissa Watson, who are two of Charlie's students.
Oh, those those are great.
And then we also have Christy Lichty.
Who is how I found out a lot about Shakespeare.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Katie Slattery, who's a talent theater teacher in New Iberia and has, you know, directed. She directed Hair last summer. And,
okay.
You know, seasoned herself. So
yeah, it's a great cast.
And I'm very lucky. Oh, and then Dr. John Fierro is our dramaturg.
And can you explain for people what that term means?
He was on hand to talk about the world of the play, which is, you know, what did they mean when they said this? How would this have been presented? You know, do we have to worry about punctuation? No, because that was added later. You know, just he was on hand to answer questions about, you know, what am I saying here and why?
Yeah.
And you know, he's a professor emeritus of English here. And so it was lovely to have him. He would just come and sit during rehearsal and answer any questions.
Yeah.
Infinite resource.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It was really wonderful.
Yeah.
And hugely supportive. Just, absolutely. You know, whenever we're frustrated, he's like, just chill out. It's all going to come together. So
yeah, it's nice to have that other voice.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
And especially somebody who's, you know, who's been around for a while.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Charlie, the involvement with two of your students, have you been able to sit and have conversations with them about what they're experiencing and how this has been for them?
I've kind of tried not to, actually,
okay.
Because I feel like it's important for them to have this experience, like, outside of school.
Got it.
And so I haven't really wanted to be their teacher, more their friend
and a co-actor.
And I wanted them to have the experience of what it would be like to be a part of a professional company and a professional process. So, you know, there's a certain freedom that I wanted them to have without them having
cool.
to feel like, oh, Miss Halpin is
watching
me.
You know, that's true.
So, yeah, I mean, after it's all over, maybe I might talk with them and see what their experience was and what their process was like.
Yeah.
But not now.
Now, and was any of this like through an audition process, or you kind of had a good idea of who would?
No, if you're a company member, you know, you don't have to audition.
Okay.
You say, hey, I'm interested in doing it this summer. And some of our company members wanted the summer off, or we're doing other projects, and that's all great, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But everything else was by audition.
You did.
And
okay.
And I'll tell you that, you know, having the two students was something that we discussed at length,
you know,
because, you know, I want Charlie to have a good summer, too, and not feel like she's teaching all summer, has to watch everything that comes out of her mouth or whatever, you know.
Sure, yeah.
And so we talked to both students right at the beginning and said, look, this is, you know, this is a different Charlie that you're going to know this summer, and you have to be okay with that, and then reestablishing it when you get back into school, you know, that this isn't going to be friend Charlie, you know, when you go back to school.
And that's very, really cool that you had those conversations with them.
Absolutely. And both of them, you know, Melissa Watson is a her parents are teachers as well, and so professors here on campus, actually.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think she understood, but it was nice to reiterate it. You know, it gave us all of us a certain freedom.
Yeah.
So.
Why should people come out to this?
Oh, because it's hilarious. And
yeah, I mean, I think that's part. It's
and
funny.
And it's fun. And it's, I mean, there are no constraints of like what you have to wear. You have to sit in uncomfortable chairs for 2 hours or anything. You know, it's like the easiest theater experience that you will ever go to.
That's right.
And then if you don't like it, then don't go see any more theater. But like if this is your first shot out, this is what you need to come see.
Well, and it's also a really great opportunity to get into Shakespeare. You know what I mean? Because this is not difficult Shakespeare. I mean, it's very sort of slapstick. It's very sort of comedic. People mistake each other. The language isn't extraordinarily difficult, but seeing it, you know, with the action, it's a great Shakespeare just to come out and watch and be involved in and laugh.
And I want you to talk a little bit about Brady, because one thing you did mention when you were on with Judith that I think is really important about Shakespeare is that the comment you made that, you know, most people, a lot of people's introduction to Shakespeare is reading it in school.
Right.
And that's difficult for a lot of folks. And that's not how it was meant to be.
No, not at all. I mean, not only is there some separation between our contemporary language and Shakespeare's language, but, you know, Shakespeare never wrote these plays to be literature. They weren't written so that scholars would sit and, you know, scratch their beards and talk about what Shakespeare really meant. They were made to be performed, to be out in front of people and people drinking and laughing and talking with their friends and watching Shakespeare and it just being moving or entertaining or funny and those types of things.
Yeah.
And most of my students that I've – you know, they hate Shakespeare, but again, it's because they read it twice in their English class in high school. And then we watch it in my classes or videos, and every one of them has a different Shakespearean experience. And they all say, yes, I don't understand every single word, but I understand the story. And it's a great story, or it's a funny story, or Titus Andronicus is crazy, you know?
Yeah.
But they have no trouble understanding what's going on. And this is very much like that. It's a very easy, it's a very funny, fun Shakespeare. Just come out and have some.
And something Dr. Fierro, you know, reminded us over and over is like some things we have no idea what the reference was, you know? Like there have been scholars and they've tried to figure it out and they don't know. Or you just have to say that this – like you can't ask too many questions sometimes in some of these comedies, you know?
Yeah.
Like you know, why are both twins named the same thing? You know, like, I don't know, but you have to think it's funny and
like
move
the
on.
Stuff that Duncan was talking about earlier. Like, why
who
would
buys
you even...
child servants for two other children?
Right. Sure. You know?
At a newborn age.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, I taught Romeo and Juliet for 13 years to high school freshmen. Yeah. And the first day, you know, after the first couple of years of learning the ropes of teaching and stuff, I would – first day of the Shakespeare unit, they had scripts, and we made newspaper swords, and they stood up and fought that scene out, that first scene where there was the street fight. And that was sort of in opposition to the way that Shakespeare is normally done. Some of my colleague teachers would roll their eyes and say, oh, I got to do Romeo and Juliet. But I was like, all right. You know, so I would try to make it live, you know, bring it to another place
for
them.
Shakespeare up on its feet.
Exactly.
And they liked it. You know, they enjoyed it.
You know, go ahead, Charlie.
Oh, I was just going to say, and another thing that was part of Elsa's aesthetic, which I think she's done quite wonderfully, is there's no corsets, and we're not wearing the garb of the Elizabethan era. It's kind of this funky 1940s.
Style,
which and slash. Carnival slash outdoor, you know,
it's an
event. It's more of an event.
Yeah. It'd be fun for people to come dressed up like that.
Absolutely.
I mean, people coming to see it.
Absolutely.
Sure, if they want.
You know?
And the only thing that's really going to discern, like, Charlie's a servant is she puts an apron on, and that's it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's as bare bones as we could, I think.
Which, again, is very reflective to how it was actually performed in Shakespeare's day because they didn't have elaborate costumes. They wore different levels of contemporary dress, and then they would have accessories that would indicate who they were supposed to be. So there we go. See? Back to basics.
There
again.
You go. That's right. And, you know, too, the one thing I learned about Shakespeare is how, you know, how much at the basics of training it is for a lot of people in acting. You know, one of my other experiences was in New York City and being at Shakespeare in the Park in Central Park. And I'm such a Nimrod, and I'm a big TV freak and Law and Order, and I'm seeing that so many of the people in the cast were bit characters from Law and Order, which, of course, I thought was so cool, you know?
Yeah.
But that let me really realize – okay, boy, this is the basis for so many people starting out and understanding, you know, really a lot of what theater and acting is about, you know.
They did Comedy of Errors at the Public last year, and one of the guys from Modern Family was in it.
Very cool. So. Well, you guys, it's been a pleasure
having you all on today.
As
always. Everybody, Comedy of Errors, put on by Wanderlust Theater Company, opens tomorrow, runs for 2 weeks, Wednesday through Saturday, beginning at 7:30.
Yes,
Elsa?
But come, you know, come at 6:30, 7 o'clock, so you can stake your spot.
And it's at the corner of Convent and St. John. So everybody get out this weekend. Enjoy Theater Outdoors. Have a good week, everybody.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you.
Support for KRVS comes from Jefferson Street Pub, offering a gastropub experience every Tuesday through Saturday for lunch, dinner, and late night at 500 Jefferson Street in downtown Lafayette. The phone number for more information is 232-5040. The website, jeffersonstreetpub.com.
This is Ira Glass of This American Life. And is this news?
I didn't always want to go to the senior center because I have arthritis, and my arthritis began to hurt. And I didn't want to go there and play bridge. It was much more fun to go shoplifting.
Bringing you all the parts of the world that don't fit into the daily news programs. Go out of your way for it. This American Life from Public Radio International.
7 p.m. Wednesdays on KRVS.
KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.